Let me see.
Are you gone all the time? I mean, in consciousness all the time.
There is no time, my dear. It's always now.
During every event in space-time. At every precise moment in consciousness, are you?
Yes, if you put it that way, of course.
You are consciously God as an experiencing unit on this plane of...
Wait a moment. Consciously, not necessarily, because that would spoil the fun. If you press button surprise, you've pressed a button so that you forget who you are.
Right, so that you don't always know all the answers to a given problem.
Yes, that's perfectly true. This is called, in the Bible, kenosis. In St. Paul's epistle to the Philippians, he says, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, being in the form of God, thought not equality with God a thing to be grasped, but humbled himself, and made himself of no reputation, and was found in fashion as a man, and became obedient to death." And so you get from this the kenotic theory of creation, held by some of the Greek fathers, that the creation of the universe is the self-emptying or self-forgetting of the Godhead. Yes, I think it's your turn now.
How does your concept of the creation of evil so that man could see how good good is differ from the old story of a man beating his head against the wall so he could feel how good it is when he struck?
It's really rather like it. Because the universe is fundamentally a system which creeps up on itself. And then says, boo! And then it laughs at itself for jumping. And you see, every time it does it, it forgets that it did it before. So it never becomes a bore. Yes, the lady in red.
Can you make yourself into a point of consciousness and travel around the cosmos such as Dr. Lilly was speaking of last night and talking about Satori?
Yes, but it isn't necessary to travel. The question is, can I make myself into a point of consciousness and travel around the cosmos and see things from all sorts of places? I say, yes, but it isn't necessary to travel. One is already there. In other words, I'm using your eyes where you are, like you're using mine. Just in the same way, my head is not my feet, it uses my feet. The head is very different from the feet. You couldn't possibly say the head and the feet are the same, but they are one organism.
They each have a soul.
Two.
What do you do about boredom?
What do I do about boredom? Press button surprise.
Oh, it's always there.
Yes, always. Yes, the lady in purple here.
You talk about boredom. It seems to me, at least in my own case, and maybe many people, that one of the biggest problems in life is being forced to earn a living at something which is not what I would rather be doing. And I often wonder, is the answer to... move somewhere and live on less money and do the thing that I would like to do, or must I resign myself, as many people have, to do the thing that gets me the bread and then in my spare time somehow try to make up for the many days and weeks and years of this kind of half living? What is the answer?
Well, there are two sort of answers, one of which you've already indicated, which is to do with less and do what you want. Which,
but if everyone did that, you know, those things, many of the things that we sort of accepted as part of life wouldn't get done.
I think the objection, if everyone did that, is rather like asking what would happen if everybody wanted to catch the 4 o'clock train to from Grand Central to Westport. Or if all the molecules of air in this room were suddenly to congregate over in that corner. There is a bare chance that it might happen, but very low. Yes.
Would you say we're going around in circles trying to eliminate evil? Because we never will. Hey, it might not be any evil.
Yes.
We never eliminate it, so we're just playing games.
We are going round in circles. But you see, going round in circles, as you may have observed by looking at the sky, is what the universe is doing. You see, before...
As long as we recognize we're going around in circles, we're all right.
Yes. Yes, that's the thing. It's a dance. And when you dance, you don't dance to get somewhere. Yes, all right, but you turn, when you wake up, you turn the confusion into a dance. And so I go back to your question. What is the alternative to clearing out of the job you're doing? And to say doing with less but having more fun. Well, there are ways of making almost any activity into a dance. Supposing you had to drive a bus in New York, which is a very harrowing job in the ordinary way, you must not take seriously anything about it. This is the first rule. That it doesn't matter a damn if you don't get there on time, but it would be fun to go as fast as is consistent with safety. And therefore, you swing that bus. And you play things with the horn. You take the whole thing lightly, as if it is not serious. And this is the nature, say, in ritual, when you have a procession. Now, people who don't understand religion don't know how to make the right kind of processions. There are those who go a military march, and they don't understand it because their objective is to get there. There are those who dawdle like ducks, and they don't understand because they are trying to be dignified. On the other hand, there are those who walk as if they had already arrived. And this is the way kings walk. Because a king is the center, and he is always where it's at. Where it's at is where the king is, by definition. So, if you work in this way, people who are practicing meditation take up monotonous things for fun. And meditation is supposed to be fun. I hope John Lilly told you that this morning. Where you say you're going to do Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. You know, you can really have a gas doing that. And so that anything monotonous can be treated in the same way. This is the way, one of the ways of overcoming boredom. Because boredom's the great problem for energy. See, energy is always on the go. Yes, sir. Yes, the gentleman in the white shirt here.
Does it bother you to be called mythic sometimes by people who like the idea of your existence?
Mythic? No. Mythic is a great word. The question is, does it bother me to be called mythic? No. Myth is very powerful. Myth is fun. Myth is stories told to children. Everybody loves them. Yes, sir. What?
Is God omniscient?
Is God omniscient? Well, it depends what you mean by the word. A lot of people think that omniscience is like knowing everything that's in the Encyclopedia Britannica. That's not omniscience, that's intellectual elephantiasis. Now, you see, let me explain this question, because it's always important. And when anybody announces that he or she is God, people say at once, well, will you tell us in millimeters the height of Mont Blanc? When I say, look it up in the encyclopedia, it's there. The thing is this. What we ordinarily call knowledge is the translation of life into words. And that is a very cumbersome process, because if we had to translate the process into words every time we took a breath, we'd never get around to it. It takes so long to describe and think through the whole physiology of breath. Therefore, we do it without thinking about it. And I find that I'm shining the stars in just the same way. I mean, if you want it in words, it's going to take us a long time to get through them because words are strung out in a line. How do you, if you are God, how do you find such difficulty in finding peace and tranquility in yourself? That's because you're looking for it away from the place in which you are. You are seeking it apart from the experience which you have at this moment. And you are regarding that experience and saying, that's pretty lousy, I'd like something better than that. But the trouble with that is that it splits you in two pieces. And once you're split in two pieces, you're lost. Because you've made a difference between the experience you are now having on the one hand and yourself who is having it on the other. And you wish you could get away from that experience. Now, the truth of the matter is you can't because you are what you experience. It's a myth purely that there is some sort of experiencer who has the experience. You are what you know, because it is not I know something. There is simply a process called the knowing. You could say the knowing, like the world, has two poles, north and south. And so the knowing ball has the knower and the known, but only in that sense. Now, knowing changes. It changes itself. But if you try to stand outside it and change it, it'll be like standing outside your hand and trying to move your hand from outside. And so comes the difficulty. In other words, this would be the difficulty for God in the press button surprise situation, where you think you want something different from what you have. But if you do think that, you've got to ask yourself the question, what it is that you really want? This is the most fundamentally important question. And you will find, if you go into it very, very deeply, that you have it. Now, you may change your mind about it, but you do have what you want.
God, if this place caught on fire, I would find myself so scared that I wonder if I would also feel that I was God, if I am God and scared, what do I do about that?
Well, one of the ways of not being bored is to scare yourself.
Yes.
Don't we all go to the movies just to be scared? We put certain limits on it, indeed, before we go and say this isn't really going to happen. It's only a play or a movie. And therefore, while we see the safe outline of the proscenium arch, back in the back of our minds as a sort of Hintergedanke, we know it's only a play.
I'm talking about when it isn't only a play.
How do you know it isn't? If you see, after all, the task of the actor on the stage is to come on so well that the audience thinks it's real. So that he has them crying, so that he has them shaking with fear, so that he has them sitting on the edges of their chairs. Well, that's just one ordinary Joe Doakes actor, but supposing the actor of the play is the real big actor. Wow, that play would seem real. And so that's what happens when the house cat is on fire. Yes, lady in red. Yes, you're looking behind yourself.
God, what is sleep for you?
What is sleep? The seventh day. What? When is the seventh day? When you sleep. Yes.
Yes, God. The only reason I know that I'm God is because I take the responsibility for it.
Yes.
Doesn't that answer the lady's question about the fire?
Oh, yes. That also would answer it, yes. It's a question of taking responsibility for what happens. If I don't do anything about the world?
What's
the boredom.
What's through the boredom?
Well, that's another way. That's another way. You can explore boredom. You can bore into boredom. And watch it. Sometimes when you're bored, that's the only thing to do. Because even for God, you can't lift yourself up by your own bootstraps. Because that is by nature of the definition impossible.
You said that the logical, you would enjoy having a myth of you.
Yes, I think that would be fun. I mean, why else does one go on stage except to make myths?
Why not?
What?
Why not?
Excuse me, what did you say? What is my motivation for going on the stage? That is like asking, why is there a universe? Well, now, if you listened to George Leonard last night, George Leonard explained how children were befuddled by being taught to ask why about everything. Because you always look away from what you're asking about to its antecedents, and that won't lead you anywhere at all. Why am I here? And I answer that question. Then somebody says, well, why that? And then somebody says, well, why that? Why that? Why that? And you get back and back and back, and eventually you get tired of answering. And so fathers, when their children say, why, Daddy? Why? They say, oh, shut up and eat your lollipop. So, but what happens, you see, when we trace the causation of things into the past, it all begins to fade out in silence and no answer. Why? Because it didn't begin there. The universe begins now. It didn't begin in the past. And the past trails back from now like the wake of a ship.
If everything is God and there is no time except now, what is the role of chance?
If everything is God and there is no time except now, what is the role of chance? Chance pairs with order. We'll say randomness, we'll call it, and it pairs with order. And it is part of the nature of order. If you know what you mean by order, you know that you mean contrast with randomness. And if you know what you mean by randomness, you know that you mean contrast with order. So if you want to have order, you must have randomness, and vice versa. Yes?
Much charisma before you discovered your true nature?
Yes, but it came out in a different way. Yes.
I think there's a sort of danger here, though. The riddles are funny, and if you had time enough to think each one through, they'd be very profound. There's a certain danger of everything and everyone being God, because if you've really found yourself as God, then you know that certain things that you, as God, have created that don't personally affect you, you create for a reason, you stay out of them, and you aren't a do-gooder. But if you think you're God, and then you try to go into too much social action and change the evils of this world, you end up hurting yourself and a lot of people, and you're playing God, and you're not really being God.
Well, I admit to you, my dear, that this is a very, very dangerous conversation. And that I thoroughly agree with, but we didn't come here, did we, to play it safe. All profound ideas and profound questions are dangerous. It is dangerous to go into science, as we all know too well. It is dangerous to go into medicine. It's dangerous to go into writing, because the pen is often mightier than the sword. And so I don't think we should withdraw from certain things because they're dangerous. But I entirely agree with you that if I were, as it were, in the spirit of God to go about social reform, I would be failing to realize the construction of my own universe, which is that when you interfere with it, you've got to know exactly how you're interfering. Otherwise, the most amazingly unexpected things will happen. So when people ask for miracles, they don't realize what the miracles involve. I mean, if I turned the microphone into a rabbit, it's altogether possible that you might drop dead, because those events might be connected.
Did you ever study with Carl Jung?
Did I ever study with Carl Jung?
Did
I never
work with him?
I didn't study with him. I knew him, and I read a lot of his writings. Yes.
Watching yourself, like watching your boredom, or being aware of yourself, you imply that there's a separation somewhere.
It does in a way, yes. And it depends how you're watching. There is a very interesting thing that comes up in this respect with regard to the Bhagavad Gita and to the Yoga Sutra, where they talk about the witness. There is, as it were, behind our ordinary self with its emotions and involvements, a witness self that does nothing more than perceive what happens. And this is the Atman or the Purusha, which is not involved. And some of you, no doubt, especially in times of crisis, have suddenly discovered this sort of witness center behind everything that just isn't involved. Most terrible things can be going on, but the witness is impassive. Now, when we go into these states, we've got to be very careful of our descriptive language, because the descriptive language makes the witness seem something apart from what is happening in such a way that if we want to become really sort of skitsy and catatonic about things, we can always be withdrawn and go in and identify ourselves with a solitary and uninvolved witness who is merely a hangout for the ego, as when the police raid a house in which there are burglars. And the burglars know they'll be caught if they're on the ground floor, so they go up to the first floor. So then the police come up to the first floor, they're up to the second, they finally get to the roof, both the open sky and the infinite. And in this way, this was why the Buddha did not teach about the Atman, the real self within us, because he knew people would use the real self as a hideout for the ego. And so, when, say, Krishnamurti tries to explain this, he doesn't talk about the witness. He talks about awareness, and people say to him, but who is aware? What is aware? And he seems a little sticky in his answer here, because what is the matter is that the people asking the question are bewitched by grammar. They are using a language in which it is part of the grammatical convention that the verb always have a noun subject. Now, how on earth do verbs get started by nouns? I ask you. How can a thing start a process? Surely, this was really the same problem Descartes was wrestling with when he tried to find out how spirit could influence matter or how mind could influence body. Because everybody knows that all proper ghosts walk straight through walls without disturbing the bricks. So how can the ghost in the machine, as Koestler put it, the soul in the body, how can it do anything to the body? There's no connection. Two different realms. The point is, when we're talking about this awareness, what we call thought, feeling, sensation, emotion, we could say in a very clumsy way is it's aware of itself. It's the very nature. There wouldn't be sensation without awareness. You don't have to have something which is aware of it, any more than you have to have a thing called lightning which does something called flashing. The flashing is the lightning. And so awareness is the one who's aware of it. Could say this awareness. If I say I am aware, the word I, as William James suggested, is simply a word of position, like this or here. Awareness here. And your awareness there. Yes, sir?
It's like one great koan that we're all dealing with before.
Yes, life is like one great koan. No, death is not the solution. It has no solution. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. You see, the thing is like this. This is what is hard for Westerners especially to understand. I said, if you understand the yang and the yin, you don't need to ask any further questions. And all you I Ching buffs ought to know this by now. What is not a component of Western common sense is that nothing is something. Now, that may sound a little contradictory, but I think I can explain it. We treat nothingness as if it were ineffective, as if it wasn't really important at all. And yet, when we look out at the night and we see all these stars in space, try and imagine what the heavens would look like if there weren't any space. Then obviously there wouldn't be any stars. I mean, you could think that they would all be jammed together in a lump. There are various objections to that. How would you see the edge of the lump and know it was a lump without space around it? Furthermore, we know when we investigate the constitution of matter physically that at the atomic level, there's more space in something than there is anything else. Most of it is empty, and which led a physicist at the Argonne Lab at the University of Chicago, who had become a little nutty, he was so impressed with the emptiness of matter that he went around in the most enormous padded slippers in case he should fall through the floor. So now what the point I'm making is this. If space is essential to solid, it's perfectly obvious then that nothing is essential to something. If you can't have something without nothing, it means nothing is pretty powerful stuff. Because something comes out of it. Bloop, like that. It's a dogma of Western thought expressed in the Latin phrase, ex nihilo nihil fit. Out of nothing comes nothing. But that's not so. Out of nothing comes something. Now you would say, well, if something comes out of nothing, there must be some kind of mystery inside nothing. It must have a secret structure of some kind. I mean, there must be sort of electrical goings on. This is the trouble they have about cosmology. How could this world generate? Could it just be out of free-floating hydrogen? No, it is a much simpler idea than that. It comes out of real solid nothing.